Yeah, no problem.
All right. So let's get your take on Penn State, which obviously has been look, I sit there and I broadcast the games. I've been surprised, obviously. What has been your thought looking from the outside in?
Surprised as well, yeah. I don't know if anybody expected, the Big Ten is upside down this year. Kind of like everything else in the world, it seems like, because of COVID-19. But the Big Ten is especially feels upside down and turned about. You have Indiana at 4-0 and Penn State at 0-4. I've been fairly shocked. I know that obviously the Nittany Lions had departures from last year and some not ideal opt outs and stuff like that, but still really, really surprised. And obviously they've played in a couple close games and maybe could or should have won them. Obviously the big one was Indiana, but really surprised that they sit here without a win.
Well, you brought up Indiana, so let's bring them up. They're going to face Ohio State this week in Columbus. They're a decided underdog in the game. But what kind of story has Indiana been for college football this season?
Well, I think any time you have a program that has not won or doesn't have the winning history and tradition of others and is often an underdog, I mean, we all like to root for the underdog, and I think this is so anytime you have an underdog playing really well, this is a great example of that. It's exciting. It's exciting for football, and it provides just some new, different angles for us writers, and that's what Indiana has done. I'm not sure how long it will last. As we sit here, I'm looking out my hotel room window at the Horseshoe, where the game tomorrow will be played, and so I'm in Columbus, and I don't really expect the Indiana winning to continue. But then again, who knows? It's 2020, and I'm not making too many predictions this year.
No, nobody's making any predictions this year. As you're sitting there, sitting in a hotel room that's probably right around the Lane Avenue area. All right, so Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been an interesting story. You put a lot into, where they are right now and what Brian Kelly has built there. What impresses you about Notre Dame and how they go about their business with this team?
Well, Notre Dame seems to be have proven, right now in college football, we certainly have a trend that continues to rise, and that is explosive offenses and, scoring 40, 50 points to win.
Yes.
Notre Dame doesn't have to do that. I know because of overtime they did that against Clemson, but they seem to play a little different style, right? They play really well defense. They have a three-headed monster rushing attack, and they have a solid quarterback, but certainly not one that's putting up prolific numbers. So again, just like Indiana, when you have something that's a little different, it's kind of fun. In Notre Dame is different. They're not the Ohio State. They're not the Alabama. They're not the Florida that are putting up, 40, 50, 60 points a game and winning offensively. Notre Dame won a game this year. I think it was like 12-9 or 12-10, whatever that game was against Louisville. So it is fun to have a team like that. I don't know how long that they can continue to win like that. I don't know if that's something that can work for them in the playoff. It would be fun if it could. And I have a feeling it's not going to be. So that's kind of the real unanswered question, I guess. But you asked about Brian Kelly. I spent some time with him just a couple of days ago while in South Bend on this trip.
That's why I brought it up. Yeah.
Right. Wrote about him a little bit. And he needs 6 wins to be the all-time leader in victories at Notre Dame, which is really incredible. But he's still lacking that one thing, and that's the national championship. And there's a history at Notre Dame. 5 coaches have won a national title. They all have the bronze statues outside of Notre Dame Stadium. I took the loop around there earlier this week, and you know, Brian, in order for Brian Kelly to get one of those statues, probably he's got to win a title. And though he says that he came to Notre Dame just to make them relevant again, which clearly they are, you know, deep down he wants to win that national championship.
Back, my broadcast partner in Penn State football, Jack Hamm, he and I were talking about Notre Dame a couple of weeks ago. They remind me a lot of the baseline tennis player that just keeps hitting it back, hitting it back, hitting it back, and then after the rally goes for a while, you try to do something and you make a mistake. That's how the two of us talked about Notre Dame football, which is for them is a smart way to play.
Yeah, that's actually a great analogy. They wait for you to kind of make a mistake. They're a team that doesn't make a lot of them, and they secure the ball fairly well, and kind of a sure-handed team that just doesn't make a ton of mistakes, and they wait for you to make them. And many teams have made them this year, even the number one team in the nation
that's
against
right.
them. So it's that is a great way to put it. When they come against a team though that doesn't make the mistakes, is when they'll probably lose a game. And I don't know, you know, maybe that happens this year, maybe it doesn't. They have certainly a road that is not necessarily easy to go. They'll play at North Carolina, which I plan to be at that game and cover it next weekend in Chapel Hill, and that's going to be an interesting one because you know, North Carolina has been a roller coaster this year, but I think they can certainly hang with Notre Dame and certainly make it a tight game. And of course, they'll have to go through Clemson again potentially in the ACC championship game.
Ross, who's the most impressive team you've seen in person? It may have been just a one-day snapshot, but who's the most impressive you've seen in person when you looked at them and go, whoa?
Well, I covered Georgia-Alabama, so
there you go.
Alabama would be far and away the best team I've seen in person. I think what you mentioned there about how Notre Dame plays and how they don't make mistakes, they wait for you to make mistakes. Well, in a way, Alabama has that characteristic and always does with Nick Saban teams because they don't make a lot of mistakes. However, Alabama has that explosive offense to go with that mentality. And what we saw in the Georgia-Alabama game is that Alabama waited for Georgia to make a mistake. Yeah, it was going back. The game was going back and forth and back and forth. And Georgia made a mistake, and that's all it takes against Alabama. They turned a 4-point deficit into a 10-point lead within like 70 seconds. And they're just so explosive, and they're sound enough on defense. They're by far the best team I've seen.
All right, so that brings me to the next part, because that was Stetson Bennett at quarterback, who began the year technically as the fourth string quarterback at Georgia, and Mac Jones. So Mac Jones is somebody that we saw step in last year when Tua went down. What have you seen in the progression of Mac Jones that allows them to be really solid at that spot where now people are considering him a Heisman candidate?
Yeah, when I covered that Georgia-Alabama game, I was asking some people there on that Bama staff, like, wow, did you after the game we were talking, did you expect this? I mean, this kid is not just been like steady, consistent Alabama quarterback, the typical ones that took snaps under Saban before Tua came into the picture. He's been just as prolific as Tua. And they said, look, you know, he's kind of bided his time. And the big thing with Mac is he knows the offense because he's been there for so long, and he sees the field really, really well. Sees the field just as well as any other quarterback I think that's come through there. So it's, you know, we talk all the time about a quarterback's skills and talent and gifts and stuff like that, but what sometimes is overlooked a little bit is the quarterback mentally seeing the field, knowing what to expect. And, man, it looks like Mac Jones does that just really, really well.
See, that's what I refer to as the chess pieces. Like Brady sees all 21 chess pieces. All right. So let's go with the highest level of all. In college, I mean, to me, that's a big thing. If a player, like, say, Mac Jones knows where 16 of the chess pieces are, that's pretty darn good. be, you know, that's the kind of vision I think you're hoping for out of your college quarterback.
Absolutely, yeah. And that Bama staff member I was talking to said there's something else that, and you hear it, it's kind of a cliche. The quarterback has to know what everybody's doing right. offensively and everybody's job and yeah. On every single play. And you know, that's not an easy thing to do. And this person mentioned that Mac Jones knows every single play and yeah. what every single person has to do on that play and where they'll be and when they'll be there. So it's, it makes a lot of sense.
How interested are you tomorrow in watching the progression of Justin Fields at quarterback? I've already had the in-person experience. It was pretty good. I mean, yeah. He is pretty good. How interested are you to see Justin Fields now compared to the Justin Fields you saw last year?
Yeah, I've never seen him in person. I'm thinking about it now. I don't know that I've ever seen an Ohio State football team in person, which
wow.
is crazy, but it's just kind of the way it's worked out. So this will be my first glimpse of them and of him. And I mean, watching him on TV, it's incredible. There's kind of an argument going on around Ohio State. I know fans that is he the best quarterback that's ever come through Columbus, which is crazy to think about. But man, if you watch him, his accuracy, you know, we all know about his running threat and his talents when it comes to his athleticism, but his accuracy has been just unbelievable. His timing has just been incredible. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can tell you, seeing Troy Smith in person, he's better than he is.
Yeah.
I can tell you he's better than Rex Kern. All right, so with all due respect, Rex, I've got a great story about that, but I'll leave it for later in the show. Trevor Lawrence, obviously, in Clemson, I mean, they're all sitting there. But let's go just outside for a moment. Obviously, you're always going to get the argument from somebody about a Group of Five team and the college football playoff. And in fact, I was talking to Greg McElroy about this on Wednesday. And, you know, because they talk about it in his show all the time. What are the odds, in your opinion, Ross, of any group of five team breaking through as long as there's just four teams there?
Very, very low. I know a lot of college football fans of Power Five teams don't want to hear that. You know, they don't want a group of five team involved. You hear it a lot. But every team playing FBS football should have a chance at playing for a national championship. Think about it. I mean, the Boise States and the Cincinnati's, and they begin a season knowing pretty much they are not, no matter what happens and what they do, they're not going to be able to compete for a championship, and that stinks, and it needs to change, and we need to expand the playoff, and we need to be able to allow one of those teams in, even if it's like an 8 seed or a 6 seed. They need a chance. No team should start the season knowing that we're not, no matter what happens, we're not going to be able to compete for a championship. So I think it's very low, and it's probably a little higher than normal this year, just given the COVID issues and all the underdog wins we're seeing, just the lack of undefeated, you know, Power Five programs so far. So it's a little higher than normal, but I still think it's like, you know, less than 10%. When in a normal year, it might be less than 3%. It's unfortunate. I know that BYU and Cincinnati, two probably best candidates, now because of a rearrangement in some schedules in the AAC, have an open date now, December 5th, so they conceivably could play. I don't know how that would help each one of them, though. They really need to play a Power 5 team. And
absolutely.
I think it's possible to play maybe a Pac-12 team, and that would be great to see, but obviously we heard no specific news on that, but that would be cool if that does happen. And what happens then? You know, if BYU over Cincinnati beats an Oregon or a USC or something, you've got to think that 10% that I just mentioned would go up to maybe 40 or 50%.
And the Pac-12, by the way, opened that door. So just so people know, I mean, that door is open. If something occurs and there's an open date for somebody, they could do it. Ross, an absolute pleasure. I mean, I'm not sure. Have you been to Beaver Stadium?
I have. I was at the whiteout last year.
Last year. Okay, great.
Yep, I sure was.
So the reason I say that is I'm sorry you won't get to see the full experience at Ohio State tomorrow. Like, at least you experienced everything here at Penn State with what it's like with the whiteout, the emotion, everything that goes with it, you know, that kind of thunderous feeling. And at some point when you go back to Ohio State, I hope you get the full experience.
Well, I hope to, too. I'll miss the dotting of the I, which I was looking forward to.
Yeah. Hey, Ross, absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, no problem.